Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
We are spiritual beings having a human experience. Welcome to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Rose, coming to you from Fort Worth in Texas. It's a beautiful balmy day today. Today I welcome the author of Transcendent Wisdom of the Maya, The Ceremonies and Symbolism of a Living Tradition. Gabriela Jiroš Landa is an anthropologist, originally from the Czech Republic. She grew up in Germany. And she studied at universities in Munich, Prague, and Vienna. A journalist, painter, jewelry designer, she was intrigued by Mayan culture for many years, and she's researched Guatemala for over 20 years, living there for 6 years, then eventually becoming a Maya shaman priestess. She's the founder, though, of the Forum of World Cultures, and I know she has exciting new developments that are moving her even beyond her interest in Maya, and she'll share those with us, too. She lectures and writes internationally, so it's a real pleasure to welcome Gabriela to today's show. Welcome. Glad you're with us.
Thank you, Paul. Hello to everybody.
You know, it's a long way from the Czech Republic and Germany to Guatemala and U.S. and all that. That's quite a far-flung journey, isn't it?
Not really. So,
but I know you like to integrate all aspects of different cultures, right? And I guess this is part of your work with the Forum of World Cultures, is that there's wisdom everywhere, correct?
All wisdom is one, and all wisdom is accessible to all. It really does not matter so much from where, and but everybody has their own way to finding it.
Right, exactly. And, you know, you were fascinated by the Mayan culture, right, and the wisdom of that tradition. And where are you now with it? Because I just got news that, you know, you've developed even further now.
Intellectually, you mean? Where am I now? So, yes, I really the book is already going into that direction. It's not quite clear from the title, but I am now transcending Maya wisdom into our Western system of thought, and especially following Comenius, a thinker, philosopher, theologian, pedagogue, who is maybe not that well known in the United States, but he's really the forefather of modern education, and has transformed the education and value system in the 17th century for us. And his thought system is very much alike what we can find in traditional societies, in this case, the Maya, because he says that we need to find back to the essence of the phenomena, and start from there very simply in a way, which does not mean that that one's world has to be simple, but essential. And I think as our reality is getting more and more complex, this is even more important today.
Absolutely. So, it reminds mm-hmm. me of some of the work of, the Austrian philosopher Rudolf Steiner, you know, and some of his techniques, right, in the Waldorf schools, that sort of integration of both hemispheres of the brain and the body, mm-hmm. as well as the mind, right, that all aspects are important. And we've lost out on that in some ways, haven't we, in the West, with our cerebral focus, right? Or focus on the end result rather than the process of things.
Absolutely. And recently, of course, with the digital enhancement of our world, the technological, we're really running away from ourselves. So, and we think it's the right thing to do. So just stopping a little bit and breathing and looking into the fire, ideally, at least a candle, can do wonders. Fire or even go, all the elements, going back to the elements and trying to meditate on those is really the biggest thing, because then through this fire or through water, you really connect with what's inside of you, and the outside also can communicate with you. In this case, mainly the ancestors. For instance, everybody has ancestors. Are we connected? Mostly not. They can communicate through fire or water, or even both connected. Because, and of course, other rocks and other things, because their language is not our language anymore. I mean, of course, they can come also in thoughts to you or in images, but through the fire, through just also the freedom and the flickering of the fire, thoughts can come to you, which do come from somewhere else. And unfortunately, being human, we're so small in a way, that we are dependent on the wisdom of those who see things from outside our world, from outside our circle.
Right, from our limited perspective on things, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and unfortunately, we don't put enough. We don't really put. I mean, you know, the Christian Church was wonderful that way, and unfortunately, it has become very. Just through the methods it's been trying to implement, it went into the background, or people resist the Christian Church. But really, you know, when I see today, many people don't give their children any education spiritually because they reject the Christian Church. I don't think that's the way to go. Any spiritual education, no matter what, is important. Which one the child, when it grows up, chooses later, I think that's another story. But to be able to transcend to this other world and build up a communication is something that ideally is being started and educated from little on, so that people are not like many today in this situation where they're 20, 30, 40 years old or older, and now they're trying to find a link.
Right. And of course, millennials these days, you know, and the generation even younger than them, you know, quite skeptical, aren't they, about traditional religion? And they don't really want to go to church in the way that you know, the baby boomers and the generation before them did. And we're seeing this, I think, you know, in churches throughout the world, that there's a drop in attendance. You know, that they don't necessarily want to go to church. They maybe want to have a spiritual life, but it's different from the old way of doing things. And, you know, churches are going to have to retool and re-examine what it means, you know, to have church. But I think the danger you know, throwing church away is that church can provide community, right? And, you know, no matter how much spirituality you have, you know, from podcasts or from other ways, there's no substitute for community. And however that shows up for us, right, may not be the old school church, but I think there's a severe lack of community. If you look at people, you know, having dinner together with their heads in their cell phones, you know, that they have a community, but the community is on the phone, not with the people they're with in the room. And that's kind of a sad indictment, I think, of our lack of being present, right? We're very distracted in our modern world.
Distracted, I agree. To the Mayans, there would be no meal without starting out thanking God for this meal. And if we think that is quirky, then I think we are quirky. Because this is one of the essences to go back to. How can we start a meal on the phone or just starting to talk about anything instead of thanking where it really comes from. When you do that three times a day or even one time a day, you, depending how how often you eat, right, Californian, then you automatically go back to the essence and align and connect. It's these little tiny tools, and the Christian church has so many of them, and hopefully we'll find a way how to communicate it better. Of course, the recent media has not just media, but the recent uncoverings of pedophiles, etc., has not helped. But of course, there are bad people everywhere.
Right.
We are only human, and that has to be overcome.
Coming back to what you referenced earlier about fire, there's a thread that goes through your whole book, isn't there, around fire ceremonies and whatnot, and just the idea of the hearth, you know. And I know even today when people build their houses, they always build a fireplace. They may not use it, but it's very important. You know, there's a huge chimney sticking out of the middle of the house. There's a fireplace.
Yeah.
And often it's, you know, it's not real wood or whatever. It's a form of, you know, gas or electricity or whatever. But there's that yearning. It's almost like an atavistic race memory. You know,
exactly.
The hearth
so
represents the center of things, right? We know it intuitively, right? We know it in our bones that's an important place. It's where we gather. And you know, in the tradition you're talking about, the Mayans, you know, it's very much alive, isn't it? That fire is huge. You see it in India as well. You know, the sacred fires that around
of
rituals
course.
That are done.
Africa,
you know,
they
wouldn't consider a ceremony correctly done without the ritual. You know, fire. So it's
exactly.
It represents that energy, that connectedness, doesn't it? The forces beyond our everyday. Everyday lives, perhaps, you know, something elemental.
It is. Well, it's not just something elemental. It is the element, or is one of the four elements. It symbolizes the origin, the sacred world, as the creator intended it. And it can mediate all knowledge. It is the source. So, of course, we want the source in our house. And cooking on fire. Gas is already a problem, but let's say cooking at least is so essential. So if we eat something that we cooked, and of course, ideally, if the nutritional products come from somewhere where we know how they grow, or even more ideally, we grew them ourselves, we are just automatically connected, and we do not need to go to meditation groups, etc., necessarily. The fire in with the Mayan people, of course, the more modern Maya people, they also have gas hearths, and the elders tell them, no, this is not the same. Fire is fire, and gas is not gas. I would compare it to electricity. We use so much electricity. You'd switch on a light at night, and electricity is stale. And it doesn't move. It is not alive. So imagine we live within this non-alive light all the time. What can we become? If we had some kind of a fire source every day around us or in our home, in our midst, how different would that be? Even the Greeks, the Egyptians, they luckily did not have electrical fire yet, electricity yet. So they had fire surrounding them all the time. Without being verbal about it, without being conscious about it, it just connects you to the source. It is the source.
Of course, a lot of people listening to this are going to say, well, that's nice, but I love my electricity. I love the idea I can plug things in and have servants working for me. You know, they say that each electric plug is six servants or whatever.
Yes,
and, you know,
there
are a lot of advantages and conveniences, right? And I guess that's why we've accepted this. You know, we've swapped the elemental for the convenience of these things. And, yeah, they do bring us benefits. You know, like you and I would not be talking today except for, you know, the digital age that is able to patch us together, you know, in three different places, the I'm in Texas. You're in Connecticut. You know, the station's in Missouri, and here we are, you know, putting out a show that goes all over the world. So, yeah. You know, that's a miracle, and so we have to give thanks for that. But it, you know, the other side of the sword there is, like you said, it cuts us off from the essential, you know, verities of our lives, and we're wise to get back to them. You know, again, you know, I mentioned the hearth, but I think I live in Texas, you know, and sure, this is true all over the states. You know, men go out and grill food on the grill, you know, again, it's a memory, isn't it? I want to get back to the simplicities. Maybe we go out hunting for the same reason. You know, we want to get back to nature in some way, to those old ways of doing things. I've recently taken up camping again after many years, and not just glamping. I mean, I'm talking about real camping, and it's been fascinating. Actually, I've really enjoyed it, because talk about connecting you to the earth. You know, you're very connected, especially as you get older. And it's harder to get out of the tent, you know. You realize how connected you are to the physical when you're camping. But there's a certain satisfaction in it, you know, that you're getting back to nature, right?
Exactly.
Back to the simplicities of where we come from in the first place.
And it purifies you. It
right.
clarifies all the. There is nothing wrong with technology, but it is a question of understanding it and using it the right way. For example, many years ago when television started, people started watching an innumerable amount of television. I was lucky because when I was growing up, my mother allowed my sister and I to watch 1 hour a day. So we really chose what we want to watch. No more, 1 hour a day. So I learned from that technology is wonderful, but we need to be able to control it. We need to be able to control it. And more today, I mean, who am I to say that? Of course, we see the way technology is going. If we don't control it, then it will control us.
Right. And, you know, many people have the television on, you know, most of the day, whether they're watching it or not. You know, it's almost like a comforting presence to them to have the television in the room with you, you know. I've never understood that. I can't stand it being on myself. If I'm not watching it, I don't want it on, you know. But I know some people just, you know, a lot of us feel awkward if there's silence, you know. They've got to turn the music on, or we got to be talking or whatever. The idea of silence is frightening for some folks, and of course, you know, in reality, silence is the connector, isn't it? It's the beautiful place where we stop thinking and start reflecting and listening to the universe around us, you know, because that silence is, and the Bible encourages us, you know, be still and know that I am God, you know, just get quiet, be in the silence. It's a welcoming presence, actually.
Yes, I'm not a fan of extremes. I just think everything is in its right measure.
Right. Well, that brings us to some of my questions around the Maya. You know, the last time they became very popular in the world's consciousness was, of course, in 2012, right? We had the end of the Mayan calendar, whatever, and then there was a lot of sensationalism about the end of the world has come and all that. And in the book, you say, in there, analysis of the time and the calendar, there was a seemingly an end, you know, in December of 2012, but it didn't mean the end of the world, right? It just meant the end of that particular cycle.
Correct. We have a very hard time understanding that because our time is linear. We live in what you might call the legal timeline, removed from natural time, which follows agricultural seasons, which are given by the movement of the sun, and one connects to the other. So we are disconnected from that. And unfortunately, Christianity, although it has its own cycles with its festivities, but it doesn't quite fit exactly the cosmic ones, meaning the 21st of December In June, for instance, the solstice, that is when the festivities should be celebrated, or around that time. So in 2012, I was invited on the 21st of December to participate those festivities. It is a moment when the time cycles back to a point where it has begun. In this case, a calendar that has begun 3114 before Christ, before our time. This coming back of the cycle means that it is an ending, but also a beginning. So it is basically, this moment has almost the same energy as it had in the beginning. So things can be altered, things can be thanked for, things can be started anew in either a different or the same way. And that's what the Maya were doing on 21st of December 2012. Just first of all, show that we're here on Earth and show that we're connected to the sun. And it was also a cycle that ended after over 5,000 years, and a cycle that ended after 26,000 years, which the Mayan call Baktun. So we're in a new 26,000 cycle now, 26,000 year cycle now. I mean, you must imagine, can we Westerners even grasp those kind of, systems, these kind of time amounts? No, we cannot, because we're not educated for it. Our calendars do not go that far. Our calendar system does not go that far. So this is one thing where we really can learn from a tradition like the Mayans, or people like the Maya, and not just in anthropology, but in general. Or even when I went to Egypt, I was surprised with what amount of time people just naturally maneuver there that we cannot even imagine. So this is one of the things where we may want to come together and learn from others.
Right, very much so. And I like what you said in the book, that, you know, we tend to think of time as a quantity, whereas in a sense it's a quality, right? And we've all had experiences where time stopped, or you thought it was, you know, an hour and it was only a minute. You know, when you're very involved, for instance, in a project, or what, time seems to stand still for you. Yeah. So we've all had experiences of the subjectivity of time. And if you study any kind of spirituality, you know, there's many systems that believe that, you know, there is no time in the sense that we look at time, right? That mm-hmm. it's more of an infinite possibility. It's here now. Everything is here right now. It's just we're moving through it in such a way that it appears to be, you know, in a timely way. But it that's not necessarily what's really going on. I love the image of the, and I'm not sure how you pronounce it, the Palo Volador. Those great, I've seen it on TV or whatnot, but I've never seen it in person, where they spiral down, right, from this great big pole with ropes attached to their ankles. And as I understand, there's four of them, and then there's one holding the center at the top of the pole. And, you know, it looks very dangerous, number one, but it's a sort of a reenactment, isn't it? The spiraling of time and space, the nature of creation. And, you know, it's very indicative, I think, of the difference between, you know, the Western viewpoint and the Mayan viewpoint, you know, around how things unfold. And, you know, if you know anything about DNA and the double helix, you know, it's almost similar to that, isn't it, in some ways? Yeah. So there's all kinds of resonances in that sacred ceremony.
You mentioned danger. If we are not willing to let go into some kind of danger,
right,
and we will always stay on this side of comfort and safety. You know, people say, oh, have a safe flight, have a safe journey. Well, yes, in a way, that's very nice. But on the other hand, there is more to life than safety. And if we cannot cross this threshold, then we will never experience a lot of the life. And I hate to say it, but in the United States, so much is connected to safety and comfort that what we're talking about here with Maya life, or you don't even have to go to Maya. I mean, even partly in Europe or many other parts of the world. You mentioned India. My goodness. The will to cross over out of your safety zone connects you to reality and to possibility and to the origin, etc. If you're always out for your comfort, you will hardly find a life way, the life, because life is not comfortable.
Right, absolutely. I think that's why people now, especially young people, seem to be going for more and more extreme sports and whatnot. They want to push themselves to the limit, with hang gliding and climbing and all these things. But even roller coasters, I think, our need for excitement, absolutely. Right? It may be expressed in a strange way, but I think it's that urge to break beyond the safety. And you're right, we have become overly obsessed, with... If the hotel we're staying in isn't perfect, we complain bitterly, how dare they do this? It's just our demands for comfort and safety are ridiculously, exaggerated sometimes, I think. Folks, I'm with Gabriela Yarosh Lander, and we're talking about her understanding of spirituality, not only through the wonderful tradition of the Maya, but in general as world knowledge, as knowledge within our own hearts. We're going to take a break, listen to these messages from Unity, and then we'll come back and discuss more about these fascinating subjects. So join us there in a couple of minutes.
Unity Online Radio is bringing the message of unity to thousands of spiritual seekers around the world. If you enjoy our programming, we invite you to support it by visiting unityonlineradio.org and clicking on Donate Now. Help us continue to provide inspiring content to everyone. Thank you for your support.
Here's a Unity Teachable Moment with Reverend Ogun Holder, taken from a talk at Unity on the River in Amesbury, Massachusetts.
Vulnerability is very uncomfortable, but as we know from so many teachings by so many people and from our own experience, the only way we will ever experience true connection is to be vulnerable, to be open, and to say, but we say to ourselves, but when we're vulnerable, we risk being hurt. Well, you only risk being hurt, again, if you don't get a full understanding of how love works. Nothing and no one can hurt you. Nothing and no one is against you. And everything that happens in your life, as I always say, and I will always say, so if I keep saying it and you keep hearing it and you get tired of me hearing it, I apologize, but everything happens in our life as an opportunity for us to show up as God.
To find a Unity Church near you, visit unity.org.
Discover Unity Village, and you'll find a peaceful oasis just 15 miles from downtown Kansas City, Missouri. If you're doing business in the area or looking for the perfect place for your retreat or conference, check out all that Unity Village has to offer. With 1,200 wooded acres, a beautiful nature trail, award-winning rose garden, golf course, and newly redesigned hotel and conference center, Unity Village has everything you need for that perfect event. Go to unityvillage.org to find out more.
Follow UnityOnlineRadio.org on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and stay up to date with everything Unity. Become a fan by clicking the like button. You can join in with a Facebook Live event or just like and share our inspirational messages and posts. Be the first to find out about any big special guests on the radio, giveaways, or events at Unity Village. Make sure you leave any questions or comments about Unity programming. We want to hear from you. Discover how to connect with our loved ones on the other side with Suzanne Giesemann and Messages of Hope. Tune in every Thursday at 3 p.m. Central as Suzanne shares evidence that love never dies. In evidential medium, spiritual teacher, and author, Suzanne brings hope and healing through her gift of communication with those who have passed. Suzanne brings messages of hope and love that go straight to the heart. Tune in this Thursday right here on Unity Online Radio.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Gabriela Yarosh-Glander. We're talking about her book, Transcendent Wisdom of the Maya, and some of the fascinating wisdom traditions that are in that ancient civilization. You know, the civilization has been impacted greatly over the last few centuries, of course, initially by the conquistadors, you know, who murdered many thousands and if hundreds of not hundreds of thousands of people, and later by domination from you know, the Spanish and then the Catholic Church, etc. But the Mayan traditions are still strong. They've gone underground to a degree, or they've become syncretic, you know, with a sort of a blend of Christianity and ancient tradition. But as Gabrielle explains in her book, they're still very much alive. And you made deep connections with people, right? Don Tomas and your teacher, right, was Donna...
Tomasa,
that's right, Donna Tomasa. And... They were able to initiate you into some of these traditions. So talk about that a little bit. What did that mean?
The initiation.
What
initiation meant?
How does it feel? You know, what's it like?
Yeah. Well, an initiation is always a permission, a beginning, and a permission to function in a certain system of thought, it is an initiation as such is a moment, a formal event with a lot of people attending, and the fire ceremony and the prayers that the teacher does over you and gives you on the way. But really, the initiation happens for you personally, maybe before, maybe way before, which in my case was the case. So, because you are really connected to the numinous beings, meaning to what we would call spiritual beings. I mean, we're all spiritual. That's why I don't really like to call it that way. So numinous, more an idea of non-physical beings, and so you're being connected to them. And the Maya have a very unique way to connect, which is their calendars. So their calendars again are not only a time counting the factor or system, but they. Every day has an alive energy, a certain energy that day is prominent. And if in archaeology, many times people think that Maya adore animals, then that is only because animals in the glyphic writing are being taken as a symbol for a certain energy, astuteness. A jaguar, for instance, or wisdom, a snake, and to make it very simple, because it's, of course, much more complex. So you're being connected to these energies, and it's amazing because you really very often throughout the initiation or the daily fire ceremonies, you start feeling this energy. You may transform into it. And go out and interact with the real world on a whole other level. many people heal that way. They transform into one of those energies and are able to heal a person. Because animals are so much superior than us, so are these energies. So, for instance, an animal can see at night. It can run much faster than us. It can live without eating for and drinking for a very long time, and so forth and so forth. So it is a higher frequency of life that we can tap into if we try, if we learn, if we are accepted, because before the initiation, or the initiation is really that you are being accepted. Like in my case, one of the major luminous beings and turned saints appeared to me at night when I asked way before the process of becoming a shaman priestess. I asked, should I really do this? Should I really go on this path? Because of course it is a big decision. And he appeared to me and gave me a hand waving, meaning like, go ahead. And, you know, several other occurrences like that. So in a world like in Guatemala, this world is very alive. It is much easier than here. Even through animals, you can get messages where all of a sudden an animal appears and you just know such and such will happen, or this and this is the truth, or the forest speaks to you, or this humongous, you may say, spiritual beings show up in the forest that you could never see, that are not real animals, right? Not physical animals. And that sometimes you see only a second until before they disappear again. They can also, an occurrence like that can make you sick, of course. It's dangerous. The whole thing can be very dangerous. Life dangerous. And so the interaction there is very intense, but on the other hand, much more easy than here.
You know, you have to protect yourself in some way, right? You have to be prepared to, you know,
there's
large, like you said, large forces and energies involved. And
yes.
And if you're not really paying attention, you know, in unity, we like to say we need to be prepared, you know, pray in advance, because, you know, if something befalls you and you're not prepared for it, you know, it's going to overwhelm you. But if you're already centered, you know, and you surround yourself in the white light or whatever, then whatever befalls you or whatever comes, you know, you can handle it, because you're already in that centered place. And I think it's the same with, you know, sport or something. You know, you prepare yourself for any contingency, so that when it happens, you know, you can do it. So it's the same way, just as we would prepare ourselves in a physical way, where we also prepare ourselves in a psychic or spiritual way. You know, the snake, I want to come back to that, because you talk about visits with serpents in the book. And it's fascinating to me how throughout all cultures, you know, the snake is that symbol of wisdom. You know, we fear snakes in some ways, but on the other hand, they're wise. You know, the Jesus talked about be wise as a serpent and innocent as a dove, you know, one of his most beautiful sayings. And in the East, in India, you know, the universe is created, you know, Vishnu is lying on a bed of serpents, you know, in the cosmic sea. And out of that comes the universe, you know. So serpents are a very potent, aren't they? Some people associate them with sexuality, and that's true too, because sexuality is life itself. But, you know, I think they also represent the wisdom of the earth, don't they?
Yeah.
They arise from the earth.
Which animal can shed its skin and constantly transform itself? And,
yes.
So they are, as we do. We humans, of course, do that too. We constantly transform if we let ourselves constantly transform. And that's how we go through evolution, even in our own one life. But it's interesting that you mentioned the serpent, because today is the day 5 Kan, which is 5 serpent. you know, I talked about the energy, every day has a certain energy.
Right.
So that is the case today. So, so it's interesting that you come back to that. What was the question?
Just musing about snakes, but I think the interesting message for me is, you know, paying attention, right? We so often we're distracted or we're not watching, we're not looking. And if you look, I'm a bird watcher, and if I watch in the sky or in the woods for a while, I see things that I wouldn't have noticed if I'd just been passing by. You know, it's just that attentiveness that comes to you when you're just waiting for a bird to show up. Well, I think it's the same with spirituality too. You know, things want to speak to us, but we're not present, so they have a difficulty doing that. But when we are present and paying attention to whatever it is, right? It could be anything. It could be something that somebody says. It could be a snatch of music or word that you might hear on the radio. So, you know, I'm amazed sometimes if I've got a word in my mind, and then that very word shows up in a conversation or on the radio. And it's like, where did that come from? How did they know that word? You know, it's almost like a synchronicity. So you understand that everything's connected, you know, that the universe wants to speak to you, right? Wants to impart wisdom to you if you're paying attention to it.
And the snake energy is also symbolic for the telluric energies between Earth and the other planets. Only now, very recently, science is starting to look at the sun as not a fixed star or not a fixed being, but that it is actually changing, and that it is actually communicating with the other planets and with our planet. Well, the Maya, of course, knew that all along, and we've been laughing about them. The telluric energies are energies that we cannot see with our eye, but that are there, and we can perceive them sometimes otherwise, intention runs through them, one way or the other, from us, from our heart to out into the universe, or the other way around. So intention is something very, very, very strong, and the telluric energies are the motor that take these intentions somewhere.
And interesting.
I believe that the same thing with the fire. What it really is, these prayers and these ceremonies, is putting attention into it. And I believe when we as humans start working more, clarifying our intentions, then we will have a much more, much stronger experience on Earth.
Right. Yeah, that's beautifully put, you know, clarifying our intentions. And I think that's true in any aspect of our lives, isn't it? If we don't know where you're going, you know, any path will take you there, so to speak. But if you know where you're focused, then you will end up in the right place for you. And but we hesitate to do that. You know, we don't trust ourselves, or we flow with everybody else, etc. And so, you know, those people that set the intention, I think, do have a remarkable lives.
Yeah, if we don't trust ourselves, who do we trust then?
Yeah, really. Because we're all we got, really, isn't it? You know? In that sense.
The movement of that began with New Age and now is transforming into really very much individual work in meditation groups and apps and this and whatnot, and yoga and whatnot, is something wonderful. But if you don't trust yourself and you trust your teacher or your guru, I almost want to say, more than yourself, then you're again on the wrong path. That's not the way to go. But that's not really what I wanted to say. I wanted to say that it's so wonderful that we're doing these efforts now that are on an individual level and sort of on a tribe level at the moment. And hopefully they will, in the future, be implemented into the whole society, meaning into education, into politics, and into spirituality as far as religions and so on. I'm very hopeful in that sense. And one more thing, there's all kinds of shamanistic groups and this and that. I just hope people don't go on this egotistic idea of, I'm the biggest shaman, I'm the biggest shaman, I know this, because that's, of course, not the point of it at all.
Right, and, you know, we talk about that a lot on the show, you know, the spiritual materialism and the fact you can spiritualize your ego without being aware of it, you know, and think you're really in touch with the essence and everything, and instead you're just creating a larger shell, you know, a larger sense of self. And it's not about that, is it? It's about being open and in the flow of these universal energies and not claiming them for yourself at all. You know, you can't wait to give them away because you realize how much you've already received. And it comes back to that giving thanks. You know, we give thanks for the food on our table. We give thanks for everything that's in our lives. You know, we go around with an attitude of gratitude, right? And I think we see this in the third world a lot too. You see people with nothing, supposedly. Yeah. You know, they don't have many possessions, but they're intrinsically happy. You know, there's a joy in them that no amount of things could bring, right? I think we've lost that sometimes. Unless we've got all the right things, we're not happy. You know, after all the right toys, etc. What a sad state of affairs that is. You know, it comes from being a quote consumer society, right? Where the more we consume, the better citizens we are. It's hard to shift that because our whole society is based now on wealth and consumerism.
That's true. But I can get up in the morning and I can be happy that the sun is shining or the rain is falling, and that I do have my food on the table, and that I'm not in Syria or Yemen, and all those things.
Absolutely. I like that what you're saying too. It's keep it simple, right? The mind tends to complicate things. The heart keeps it simple, and when we're connected to the basics, to the simplicities of our lives, you know, that then we feel true. Harmony and peace, I think, you know, trying to work it out, how are we going to make the politicians, you know, come up higher? It's probably never going to happen, right? We're just going to have to accept them for who they are and hope that, you know, like you said, if enough people, you know, shift their way of being, eventually the others will follow suit.
Unfortunately, we cannot wait for somebody to shift their being when they are in a high position. We cannot wait for that. No.
Yeah, I know. It's very frustrating, isn't it?
But I don't. When you talk about simple, I prefer to say back to the essences, because simple, makes me think. For instance, the new feminist movement, right? I don't know if I can clarify my thought right now because I haven't thought about it for a while, but just simplicity is not really what I'm trying to say, because simplicity means, the man cannot even look at you in the gym anymore. The poor man, they stopped talking to women because they're afraid they were going to be accused, or Joe Biden cannot even touch somebody on the shoulder anymore. I mean, that sort of Puritanist simplicity is dangerous in itself again. So therefore, I am not using the word simplicity, but rather back to the essences.
Right, yeah, I take your point.
From there, growing from out of there.
Yeah. Well, you know, back in the day, there used to be a separation between the word simplistic and simple. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, exactly. People use them synonymously, mm-hmm. you know, but mm-hmm. what you're mm-hmm. saying is, you know, we don't want to be simplistic about this and come yeah. up with easy answers yeah. or whatever. Yeah. But the true simplicity, I think, is very beautiful and it is very to do with the essences. But when we're simplistic about things, you know, we come up with easy answers or we throw out the baby with the bathwater, as we say, you know, like you said, you know, because we've got this important movement, you know, this Me Too movement, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes it goes to extremes so that, mm-hmm. you know, like you said, now we can't even, you know, we're scared to do anything.
Yeah.
And that's yeah. unfortunate. But I think that tends to happen sometimes, you know, unfortunately.
Another example is within the Christian church. I grew up within the Catholic path of the church, and I am very grateful for our beautifully decorated churches. Okay, where the money for it came from—that's of course a whole other subject. But through this beauty, through this abundance of a Baroque church, I can transcend. If I'm in a church, but again, that may be because I grew up that way. If I'm in a church that's completely empty, I feel empty too. I don't have anything to put my heart into. And it's much harder, of course I can, but it's much harder to look only at the cross and hope that that something happens than if I have some help through decoration, through music, through beauty.
And, you know, some people would, say that the Baroque churches are too ostentatious for their taste,
that's,
you know, and other people,
example.
You know, want to go to a Gothic yeah. church or whatever. So each to his own, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm hearing from that is that there's a wide variety and possibility in our world. You know, there's something for everyone, and we celebrate that. I've had a person on my show many times. He likes to talk about the smorgasbord of offerings. You know, that we live in a time of a spiritual smorgasbord where you can take something that, you know, appeals to you and leave the rest, and somebody else will, you know, pick up something else. And I kind of like that idea, you know, that, yeah. that we're celebrating diversity, but we're also mm-hmm. noting the unity of the table. You know, this one table, but with many, many gifts upon it. So we only got a few minutes
many
left.
Gifts. Exactly,
let's talk,
many gifts.
Let's
abundance.
Talk about where you are today. What's your latest ventures? Where are you headed?
Well, as I said, right now I am working on a new book about more the transcendence of that Maya wisdom and connecting it even further with the Western thought system, just to make it more accessible to us.
Very
so
nice. Yeah.
That is
good.
One. And then, of course, I have, you know, many book readings and interviews and things like that at the moment. So a lot of PR things as well.
Yeah. So if people want to get hold of you, do you have a website?
I have a Facebook site that's called Transcendent Wisdom of the Maya, just as the book title that they can join. Or my website is my name, Gabriela-Zurosh-Landa.jimdo. JIMDO. It comes up on a Google search.com.
Right. All right, very good. And folks, this book is, of course, available in all the usual outlets. It's
Suspect.
Got some beautiful plates inside, which describe many of the ceremonies that show the many of the ceremonies that Gabriela describes in the book. There's a lot more in it that we've covered so far. I did want to mention the seeds. You know, seems in all these traditions that there's divination, right? Ways of using various cards or runes or sticks, or in this case, seeds, to divine the you know, the meaning of things, and that's important to the Maya, right?
The numinous beings do not speak our language mostly, so we need to find a language that is more abstract, and those divinatory systems help. They're just another form how to communicate. and they bear a lot of essence. And seeds, of course, are the primary idea of the unity, the one seed out of which something can grow, which holds a lot of life power in that one seed that can grow into something. So, yeah, and how the system works, I describe a little bit of it. Also the Maya writing has always been done with divination. So reading the glyphic writing is almost not possible without tapping into that, into this divinationary process through the fire and the seeds. That's that. There's more in the book about it.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, I use the tarot deck myself. I found that very mm-hmm. helpful because, again, that yields a lot of rich symbolism for me. And, you know, I think you know, encourage anybody to choose the method that works for them. The important thing is it's mm-hmm. not magic. It's not like you're giving your power away to some form outside of yourself. You're really tapping into your own wisdom using that particular method, that particular code, if you like, and because wisdom's everywhere, and it will appear in all these various methods. So it's not giving up, you know, your own wisdom here. It's allowing your wisdom to expand. I think that's important to know.
It is magic, folks. Because that is magic, and you are magic, and everybody is magic. So yeah,
there we go. Yeah, the inner magic. Let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll say goodbye to Gabriella. Next week, my wife, Wendy, joins me once again, and we discuss how to maintain deep peace in the midst of change and discord and fear. And we'll offer seven practical tools to put into effect just that. So if you're interested in how to keep peaceful in difficult times, join us next week. But right now, I want to thank Gabriella so much for being on the show. What a wonderful, fascinating in conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend Paul. All the best to you and everybody.
Thanks, folks. Thanks for listening and see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.